My name is Joy Tai. I'm 40. I'm a human rights lawyer from South Sudan. What I'm about to share with you now is my history. It is also a story about oil and how it has changed our land in more than one way.
This is a story that spans decades and continents, from Africa to Europe.
Two former executives at a Swedish oil company have gone on trial in Stockholm. They are accused of complicity in war crimes committed by Sudan's regime between 1999 and 2003.
The investigation itself went on for over 10 years, and it involved hundreds of interviews being conducted by the Swedish War Crimes Police and Prosecution. The prosecution's investigative report alone is over 80,000 pages.
It's about blood and oil and who should be held responsible. I'm Stephanie Stafford, and this is Poisoned Flood, a Life at 50 investigation for the documentary on the BBC World Service. To understand this story, George's story, I need to take you back to the 1980s, to where he grew up in what is now Unity State in the northern part of South Sudan.
A green area surrounded by swamps and trees and vegetation, it is evergreen. During dry season, you dry the cow to the grazing areas along the River Nile. In the wet season, you see the area is green because grass is coming out, people are cultivating. It was beautiful.
But below the fertile floodplains was something others wanted, oil.
My village is called Lair, that's how it is known, but other people give it a different name. They call it Block 5A. Other people from the oil and gas industry know it by their name because they like the oil that is underneath us. They don't like the people that inhabit the area.
In 1997, a Swedish company called Lundin Oil took over the concession in George's area, Block 5A. Sudan was in the grips of a civil war between the government in the north and southern separatists. Just a year after Lundin Oil arrived in the area, George's town came under attack from government-allied militias.
I was shocked. Everyone was screaming, crying, because you could see someone being shot. Because they were shooting towards us. Children were everywhere crying. Many people died.
He managed to escape, hiding in the reeds on the banks of the River Nile. He watched as his village went up in flames.
Then we saw smoke forming in the skies, and we realized that the town was burned, and the neighboring villages were also burned to ash.
After 7 days, when he thought it was safe, he returned to try and find his family.
I could see dead bodies for the first time on the street. I've never seen a dead person. I was looking around, people were returning one by one. I could not see my dad. I told them what happened. They said, your father was killed in the attack.
It was the first of many attacks.
The following attacks, the government would come first with a bombardment. They bombard the area, followed by helicopter gunship, terrorize people. And then the advancing troops would arrive and finish the job.
It was decided that George and his brothers would leave to find safety. His mother refused to go with them. She didn't want to abandon her land. When George returned a year later, it was to devastating news.
I came back in April and I found a different story altogether. Shocking one, that my mother had been killed in one of the attacks, and also my stepmother was also killed. And some of the cattle we left behind were also taken. So I found that it was a devastated life. I cannot live there anymore. I didn't have any future. We came to realize whenever they discover an oil well, they send troops there, they displace the population. Some few days later, you will see that they are now erecting rigs, oil rigs in that area. They didn't want us as people. They needed the land.
It's estimated that 12,000 people were killed in Block 5A and 160,000 displaced during the time Lundin Oil had the concession. That was 1997 to 2003. What happened during those years and who should be held responsible is what's now being decided 2,000 kilometres away in Sweden.
Yes, so the Lundin Oil trial, which began in September of 2023, is a historic trial involving Lundin Oil, or a company formerly known as Lundin Oil AB, a Swedish oil company. And it's charges brought by the Swedish government against them for aiding and abetting serious international crimes in what is now South Sudan.
This is Ebony Wade from Civil Rights Defenders in Sweden.
The prosecution alleges that the company entered into an agreement with the Sudanese government that made the Sudanese government responsible for creating what they call favorable conditions for the consortium's oil operations by protecting the oil company's area and ensuring that the oil companies could explore in the area. And in actuality, what this entailed was the Sudanese military pushing the local inhabitants out of the region, out of the areas where the oil company wanted to exploit oil.
It's not just the company that's on trial. It's also the former chairman, Ian Lundin, and the former CEO, Alex Schneider.
So the allegations aren't that Lundin and Schneider actually committed any sort of violent actions themselves, but rather they're charged with aiding and abetting violations of international law during the years 1999 to 2003. And what this means is that they are suspected of having contributed to the atrocities committed by the Sudanese regime and their allied militias against the civilians during that time. And this aiding and abetting amounts to serious violations of the laws of war, and it constitutes a crime under Swedish and international law. So there are specific meetings in 1999 and 2000 in which one or both of the defendants asked the government, the Sudanese government, or representatives of the government, to provide security for the company's operations. And the prosecution has argued that the defendants and that the company engaged in these acts with the aim of securing the company's oil operations in Sudan. The backdrop of this is that the Sudanese civil war had been ongoing for many years at this point. So the prosecution is saying that it's hard for the defendants to argue that they had no idea that the government would carry out security operations in this violent manner, because it's exactly what they had been doing for years during the war. These tactics weren't new.
The company, Alex Schneider and Ian Lundin, have repeatedly and strongly denied the allegations.
The accusations against us are false, they're completely false, and they're very vague. Sudan has suffered from internal conflicts for many, many years, but we never had anything to do with these conflicts.
In a statement to the BBC, they said,
"We refute that there are any grounds for allegations of wrongdoing by any former Lundin representatives. Lundin operated in Block 5A in Sudan responsibly, as part of an international consortium and in full alignment with the policy of constructive engagement endorsed by the UN, EU and Sweden at the time. We are convinced that Lundin was a positive force during our time in Sudan. The defendants look forward to putting this unprecedented case behind them and having their names cleared once and for all."
With his family dead, George had to forge a new life alone. In a quest for justice, he studied to become a human rights lawyer. Then a post on social media brought Block 5A and oil back into his life.
It was in 2018, after 15 years, when I left Blair and after my mom and my dad was killed. A Facebook post, social media post, someone was posting about some civil society organization from South Sudan being in Stockholm preparing a legal suit to open a criminal investigation against a company called Lundin that operated oil in Block 5A. So I was excited. I was like, wow, there are still people talking on this issue. I commented innocently in excitement.
The following day, he received a call from a Swedish investigator, and they arranged to meet.
I met the Swedish police outside South Sudan. After meeting them, I went back to South Sudan, and less than a month, I started receiving threats.
There were men looking for him.
I was told, look, we have heard that you are talking to some people from Europe about crimes committed in United States, and you are creating awareness on false things. We are here to tell you that you should not continue talking like that. You don't need to tell them lies. Should you continue telling them lies, you are going to face it with your life. Some months later, they resorted to, you know, anonymous calls I received, threatening me, telling me that you need to stop what you are doing. You must stop. If you don't stop, you will fail with your life.
Despite the threats, George travelled to Stockholm in 2023 to attend court hearings. He hoped the trial would lead to compensation.
Victim must be compensated. Compensation, not individual compensation, but collective compensation to the communities, because they collectively suffered, so they must be collectively compensated. Well, this was our hope, anyway, that compensation must come. Otherwise, there will be no justice.
But when he came home, he found his house had been ransacked.
I arrived in the evening. I opened my room. What I found was different. I found all my belongings were scattered. The room was disorganized.
George went to stay with a friend. Later, he heard two men had come to his house looking for him.
They came and asked about me from my neighbors, and then they would disappear. And then followed by death threats, anonymous calls. Each time they called, they mentioned Lundin. Lundin, Lundin. Each time they called, you are involving in Lundin and you must stop.
He booked a one-way plane ticket. He told no one.
It became unbearable and the threat were growing. I had to flee South Sudan. That night, the last night I spent in Juba, I never slept at all, thinking about what future holds for me and my family, and how the people who are responsible for the deaths of very many people in United States, including my parents, are running after me, you know, for the mere fact that I'm speaking out.
Ebony Wade from Civil Rights Defenders in Sweden says George's case isn't an isolated one.
Throughout the investigation, there have been allegations that potential witnesses and victims have been the subject of threats and bribes in an effort to pressure them into not testifying or to take back statements that they had made against the company. And as a result of these allegations, the Swedish prosecution opened an investigation into the allegations in 2018, an investigation that implicated Ian Lundin and Alexander Schneider, although both of them have consistently denied any involvement or knowledge of it. And the Swedish police recently confirmed that the investigation is indeed still open, and to obstruction of justice allegations.
Ian Lundin, the former chairman of Lundin Oil, and Alex Schneider, the former CEO, strongly reject the allegations. In a statement to the BBC, they said,
"The Swedish prosecution authority investigated these grave allegations for several years before closing the investigation in 2023. We understand that a new investigation has been started, but we would like to stress that neither the company nor any former representatives of it have been notified of any suspicion concerning this new investigation. It is beyond comprehension that these allegations continue to be used to discredit the company and its former representatives baselessly."
You're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service. The year before he fled South Sudan, George was investigating another way oil was damaging his country: pollution.
I heard people talking about children being born, with deformities, other people suffering from environmental-related issues. And then I developed that interest.
George, now working as a human rights lawyer, returned to where he'd grown up in Unity State, where different oil companies are now operating.
What I saw was that the oil companies dump chemical waste that are toxics in a shallow, dark pit, you know. Those pits are shallow, they are often not protected. They get their way into the water, and then that water is the same water consumed by the people. People drink from it, and animals and all this.
Working on this investigation with me is South Sudanese journalist Mara Ajak. She's travelling to an oil concession called Block 1, just north of Block 5A, the area George grew up in. Block 1 is run by a consortium called Greater Pioneering Oil Company, known as GPOC.
Unity State is no longer the same lush green area that George describes. Severe flooding linked to climate change has meant much of the land has been underwater for 4 years. The road I take to Roriak is surrounded by water on either side. Villages have become islands.
In 2019, the extreme flooding began. At the flood's peak in 2022, up to 70% of Unity State was underwater. More than 700,000 people have been affected across the country.
I go to meet Chief Chilhok Port, a community leader, and some local women who show me a dirty pond where they collect water. I ask if they think the water is clean.
It's not clean. The water is dirty because this place has oil. It has chemicals in it.
We know it's bad water, but we don't have anywhere else. We are dying of thirst. The water makes us cough. If you drink it, it makes you pant and cough.
The chief worries oil pollution is causing health problems in babies.
When floods came to our area, water mixed with the chemical waste, and we started seeing babies born with no eyes.
What the chief tells me about the birth defects is really worrying, and I need to find out more. I go to visit the state hospital. The doctor takes me to meet a mother and her newborn baby. The baby has birth defects affecting his mouth, nose, and legs, and he's on oxygen support. The hospital doesn't have the facilities to do genetic tests, and it's rarely possible to know for certain the cause of any genetic abnormality in a child. But the doctor thinks pollution might be a factor.
Those people, they have oil in the area. This is when they come due to problem of oil. Those people have no access to clean water. They just drink from the river. Wherever water and oil are mixed. That might be the problem.
The doctor tells me he has seen many similar cases.
People are suffering. People born with no limb.
Peer-reviewed studies by a German NGO in 2014 and 2017 found high sulfate content in the water and heavy metals in human hair samples. These are indicators of oil pollution and could increase the risk of birth defects.
The BBC has spoken to David Bojo Leju, formerly a senior engineer for GPOC, an oil consortium in Unity State. David alleges that GPOC mismanages facilities, polluting the environment. He shared videos he recorded when he worked there.
Oil spills from the wells itself, wellheads. Oil spills from wells connecting other pipe connecting other wells. Oil spills from the main export pipeline that had happened in a big quantity in 2019 and 2020.
David left GPOC in 2020 after 8 years. He says the pollution he saw was never cleared up and is more dangerous now than ever.
So with this flood right now, it is a disaster. The whole of that contaminated soil with the hydrocarbon is going to be flooded all over the United States.
The BBC contacted GPOC with these allegations. They did not respond. After seeing for herself the impact, Maura heads to Juba, South Sudan's capital, to speak with Mary Ayen, a politician who's been vocal about these issues.
You know that it started in the 70s, but when the oil exploration started, the main objective, the industry did not consider sustainability in a way that it pay attention to the people living around the areas. The Republic of South Sudan inherited an industry that was based on bad practices. Sustainability in oil production was not considered.
After mounting pressure, the government launched an environmental audit last year, but it still has not published the results. We contacted the South Sudanese government, but it did not respond. It's a hot Sunday morning in a city in Uganda. For George's protection, we can't say which city we're in. We've come to a market. It's bustling. There are stalls heaped with fruit, meat and vegetables.
It's fine, let's just move. It's fine.
But George can't stay long.
Whenever I come to a public place like this, I feel like some people somewhere might see me and then be able to know where I am. Because technically I'm in hiding. I don't move anywhere.
What forced George to flee South Sudan has followed him to Uganda, where he now lives in hiding.
People who gave me death threats in Juba across the borders to Uganda looking for me. That's why I'm scared. Coming to the places like this, to the market, make me feel that I can come into contact with them and maybe they can default me back or do me anything that they like. That's why I'm scared.
In Sweden, the trial against Lundin Oil is ongoing. The court is expected to reach a verdict by 2026. But whatever the outcome, there is no chance George and other victims of violence will get compensation in this case, as there has already been a ruling on that. Ebony Wade again from Civil Rights Defenders in Sweden.
So shortly after the trial started last fall, in late November of 2023, the Stockholm District Court made this unusual decision to separate the plaintiff's claims for damages, the civil case, from this criminal case. And what that means, in essence, is that even if the defendants are found guilty, even if they are convicted, the plaintiffs, the victims in this case, will not be able to receive any financial compensation in this trial, the criminal trial, for the losses that they have suffered.
But George is still hopeful that it will have an impact.
It will also set a legal precedent in the sense that in future, companies will be mindful of what they do. Yeah, my state government or the government of my country might take action, legal action against me. So it is a good legal precedent, actually, in that sense.
It's also extremely rare for corporate executives to be held accountable for grave human rights violations. And it's incredibly unique for the leadership of a multinational company to be put on trial in a European company on charges of complicity in war crimes committed during the conduct of their business activities.
It's the weekend, and I'm joining George and his family on a road trip. In the car, he reflects on the impact oil has had on his life.
The oil that forced me to leave South Sudan, it's the same oil that I'm using now in the car that I'm using, that I'm moving with. I will speak now. It is because of oil. All this you know, persecution, threats, and all these things. It started because of oil.
Liberal? Huh? Liberal, boy.
He takes his kids down to the banks of the River Nile. The water here connects him with his village, the village he isn't able to return to.
It has a connection. It is the same water, actually, that passes through my village. So it is like I'm at home. I'm just telling them that this exactly looks like our village. Yeah, yeah. You can go from here using riverboat up to our village in Ler. So I've just brought you here to see the nature of our village. Now it's like they are in our village. They are very happy. They are saying, really, you can go from here up to our village? They've never seen it before. You want to go there? I take you there?
You have been listening to a Life at 50 investigation for the documentary on the BBC World Service. It was presented and produced by me, Stephanie Stafford. The editors were Rebecca Henschke and Monica Garnsey. It was mixed by Neva Masirian.